Welcome back to It Starts With You podcast. I'm excited about this podcast. I get to speak to the brilliant, the guru of video, the master of video, Mark Aceford, and we talk about loads of things. So let's get right into it, and I'll catch you on the other side. So, hey, Mark, how you doing?
Hey, I'm good, Mark. Good name, by the way.
Yes, brilliant name. We spell it the right way as well, not with a C.
Exactly.
Do you find throughout your life people called you Marcus for a period of time? Did you get that?
I never got the Marcus. A lot of people still do MARC, which I just find weird because MARK is the right spelling of our name, isn't it?
You know, I think it is. But people think it's the Welsh spelling of my name. So whenever I speak to people, they think, is it with a C or with a K? It's with a K. That's different, isn't it, for Welsh people?
Really?
Yeah. What's that?
No, it's the right way.
The right way to spell it. It's from the Bible, for crying out.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly right.
Was it one of the disciples, Mark? Matthew, Mark, Luke, John? Yeah, it must be. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, yeah. It's a bit biblical.
It's biblical, yeah. We're old. We're 2,000 years old, at least. Oh, God. So I think this is going to be one of those podcasts where you and I just rant for about an hour.
Yes, and probably.
And talk about life. I just jumping into it, because you everyone knows you, so there's no point introducing who you are. This is Mark. He does Red Spout. He does video.
Hello.
I watched your video this morning about ADHD and everything.
Oh, yeah.
And I did one with Thomas Woodhams a couple of weeks back, a podcast about his ADHD journey.
He's literally texted me, actually, because that was the call that was coming in. So he said, ring me as soon as you can or something. So I've got to ring him after this podcast.
Love it. He is an awesome guy. We spoke for hours before that podcast. such a lovely guy. But when you come across ADHD, now it's becoming more kind of understood, I think is the right word now. And thought process behind it and medication is out there. When I heard your podcast, when I watched your video this morning, I was like, oh my God. So it's going to be a challenge, isn't it?
You'll need to unlock your phone.
Oh God, my, did you hear that?
What was that?
That was Google. It's listening to it.
I'll tell you what. Yeah, I was just starting to watch The Great Hack actually last night because Olivia recommended it to me, and I got in about 10 or 15 minutes into it and then got distracted. So I've got to watch the rest of it, but they were talking about exactly that, actually, the fact that, you know, your phone's always listening to you. So yeah.
Oh, it's scary. Alexa does it to me sometimes when I'm watching TV. She'll just randomly say something and you're like, what?
Jack, I don't know if you saw it, Jack, my son did a video on that as well, with Alexa always listening to you. It was bloody hilarious.
I think I did
it. Yeah, it's so funny. You did it really well. Anyway, sorry, what were we talking about?
ADHD. I just want to cover it a little bit, because I think for you, you're documenting it, and I really like the fact you are documenting it. Me and Thomas talked about it, and I thought I had it, but then I took a test. Your video pointed me towards the test. And I was very low down in the score. So for me,
You're fine.
Yeah. So I'm fine. I think it's just too much coffee, maybe, is my problem.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. And that's the problem, actually, because it's one of those things where everybody experiences parts of it. So, which is, I think, why it goes so undiagnosed, actually, because we can all be unorganized and we can all be unfocused and distracted and impulsive, but it's when those parts of your brain and the way that you operate kind of take over, and it becomes sort of almost who you are, that then it's worth sort of taking that test and seeing what the score is. And then if you want to, I mean, it's, you know, I'm really trying to be very careful about the content that I put out. Although I'm documenting, I'm equally not advising. I'm just telling people what I'm going through, and if it helps, then brilliant. But I always try and caveat these things by saying I'm not a doctor, and I'm also very, very early in my journey with ADHD, so I'm no expert either. But It's crazy how many people have come through, mostly on private message, actually, and just shared their stories and their journeys, and are really appreciative that somebody is standing up and being very, very open about the whole thing. So, and I think we're lucky in this day and age, aren't we, Mark? Because, you know, it's become much, all these sort of things, and mental health has become a topic that people can be much more open about these days, I think.
I agree. And I think I'm so glad that someone like yourself as well is documenting it. Because like you just said, that you're taking it as cautiously as possible and making sure that you just show your story. I have
exactly
the problem I have with Mental Health Week. Sometimes companies are going in like bulldozers talking about mental health and not thinking about it the way they're doing it and using, you know, really good examples. And I've never really experienced mental health to the point of which I should be talking about on video.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I hadn't either until this came along. And it was, I tell you the interesting thing as well, because it's, I think a lot of schools are now very conscious, because obviously ADHD and certainly the hyperactivity side of ADHD becomes very obvious at school with kids who are trying to concentrate in the class. Yeah. But can you imagine a conversation between somebody in the office with their boss and talking about, okay, so listen, I've just been diagnosed with ADHD. Can you help? Yeah. And can you support? I think it would be a very, very different conversation to the one between the kids, the teachers and the parents around trying to support the children. I think it would probably still be quite frowned upon. And, you know, what help and support can an employer give to somebody? I think that conversation still needs to happen in a lot of workplaces, to be honest with you. I'm lucky, and this is also the reason that I've been quite open about it. It's my business. I haven't got a boss to have to try and get support from. I've got, you know, my guys here who are brilliant at supporting in the areas where I feel challenged, and that is unfocused and distracted and impulsive and very, very badly organized. And I've surrounded myself with people that can compensate for that, really.
But you touched upon something there where people may believe that their boss won't understand them if they come to them saying, you know, I'm feeling really bad at the moment mentally, or I may have ADHD. And they feel scared to admit that. And I think some people make it worse, exacerbate the situation, I think.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I've seen it in the fact that I've been quite open about putting out these videos on LinkedIn, but yet actually most of the commentary and the stories that I hear are through direct message, because people don't want to put it out there and don't want to tell people about it. And I totally get that, especially if you're in a position where, you know, people could make judgments on that. I'm lucky. I don't have anybody to be accountable to in that sense. I mean, I have clients and candidates and all of the rest of it, but I don't have a boss that I'm not sure what their reaction is going to be.
It's scary. I remember many years ago, I was really stressed out in the job, and I remember saying to my boss, I'm really stressed out. I feel like I'm losing my motivation. And he just ranted at me. He just made me feel really small. And I hate. And that's what kind of made me think that, and this is just my perspective, that I don't think there is any more real support in jobs today when it comes to mental health.
Do you know what? We did our first LinkedIn Live event, and we invited a guy called David Beeney to come and be our sort of keynote speaker. And he talks about mental health, and especially on the side of men, actually, and mental health.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, his sort of mantra was that everybody has mental health. It's not one in three or one in four. It's one in one. Everybody has mental health, and everybody needs to look out for their mental health.
I agree.
And when you kind of reframe it in that sense, then just because you can't see it and it's not a physical disability, we should be playing, you know, huge focus on this in the workplace as well, because actually people will become so much more productive if they're in a great mental state. So yeah,
that's it. It's such a huge subject. I feel sometimes I'm looking at some companies and they're doing the wrong things. And so I always say to people, if you feel like you've got these issues, just go and seek help straight away. Go and speak to someone. Go and speak to a professional about it. Or watch some of your videos to get some sort of epiphany in there.
I'm no expert, mate. I tell you,
But it's good. You're raising awareness in the right way. And that's what I love about you. You raise awareness in the right way. So Mark, you're known quite well now on social media. You've gone viral how many times now? Three?
Depends what you've got. I mean, it's funny, isn't that, that whole term viral? I mean, the first funny video we put up about job descriptions hit just shy of 1 million views, which was, I mean, yeah, I'd probably class that as viral. And then a couple of the follow-up ones have hit 500,000 views. So they've done well. They seem to have captured the imagination.
I've gone viral once, and it was a rap I made up.
What, you rapping?
Not physically on a video, no, just the words. I'll send you a link later. I remember to send you. It's actually in the Recruiter magazine as well.
Oh my God. Yeah. Oh, you've really hit fame then if you're in the Recruiter magazine.
when it went, and this is the thing, and I don't know if you can kind of see from the perspective of how can I put it, from my perspective of how it went, okay? I've never gone viral before. And then when I did this rap, it went, I think it was 500,000 views in like a day.
Nice.
It went really quick. And what led from that was just this concession of weird people coming to me and asking me questions.
That happens.
And also I had this theory. Once it leaves your second degree connections, it enters this world of third degree connections that I think they live on an island somewhere or middle of nowhere, and they don't understand society or LinkedIn or social media. And then they're like, why is this on my fucking feed?
I know. I had one last night. Literally, it was about 5:45 last night. I had this call come through and on my mobile from Miami, Florida, and I was intrigued. So, I mean, normally I wouldn't pick up calls like that. I picked it up, and it was this American guy who was just trying to get me onto a Zoom call at 7:00. And I said, well, why? What do you mean? What are we talking about? And he just gave no information at all. I said, well, no, I'm not available. You know, unless you're going to give me some detail about what we're talking about, why we're talking about, if I can offer any advice or, you know, some sort of opinion on stuff, then why are you just trying to randomly get me on a Zoom call? It's bizarre. They come out the woodwork, don't they?
This is the negativity about when you do videos like this, when we do anything that goes slightly outside that norm. Yep. People just come at you. So what was the idea behind that, the first viral video, especially the toilet sitting?
So we've been doing video for about 3 years, and we've been kind of messing around with it, trying to get some sort of big traction on it, really. And then I started to watch a lady called Shay Rowbottom in the States. Yeah, and she does some amazing videos. And it kind of was a bit of a light bulb moment for me, thinking, well, actually, I was always a great advocate for the fact that LinkedIn was a social media channel. It had gone beyond the realms of being just a sort of professional network of stuffy, boring content.
I agree.
But I think Shay was just really shaking it up and putting real humor into it. And I didn't know anybody else that was doing that. And so essentially, we copied her. And that's what, you know, we put together a sort of office skit video about job descriptions, feeding a different audience. Obviously, her market is very much over in the States. We're trying to hit the UK. And so we did it in our way, and it just went crazy, to be honest. So, and I think, you know, the essential part of that was the thumbnail that at the start of the video, which was me sort of lying on the floor with a bottle of Glenmorangie. So I think, you know, and that's, I suppose, the important side of video is that, and the bit that people don't necessarily concentrate on so much, but the written commentary on your video, the thumbnail, all of that kind of stuff is really, really essential to grabbing the interest of people as they scroll through your feed. Because it's not like YouTube, where people go and search for content. They're just coming across your stuff, and you've got to capture that imagination really, really quick. So it just went mad.
The YouTube methodology, it's all to do with how you write the title and how people search on that title. I always found if you write a question as the title, people find you quicker on YouTube.
Yeah.
I've
never been able to get YouTube to work for us. I think it's still a very tough space.
It's organically, it's a nightmare to grow. And I've got 50 subscribers, 50.
Yeah.
In 3.5 years to get that organically.
I know. We're up to, I think, something like 315 now, but most of those have come over the last week, where I've got pissed off with LinkedIn messing around with you know, the videos that everyone can see, and just tried to encourage a load of my followers over to YouTube. But even when you're doing that, the numbers are tiny. You know, the people that are actually prepared to come off LinkedIn and follow you on a different channel is still very, very small. So I think we're just going to produce a video, actually. We're just in the middle of shooting it now, which is all about planning videos and the kit and the editing and the captioning. And because you're only given 10 minutes on LinkedIn, we're gonna do a sort of LinkedIn teaser video and then try and throw people across to YouTube to watch that, because you've just got much more time basically to go into detail over there. It's a tough one.
But with LinkedIn, I realized people read it, or like you say, they read the bit at the beginning of it and then they look at the video. But to look at the bit at the beginning, the reading bit of the post, they've got to be attracted by the video. So what I yes. tend to use very large writing and tell people what the video is about, basically.
Yeah. Exactly. I think you've got to do that. I mean, that is the psychology behind it. You know, I mean, we also on LinkedIn have got used to now producing 1 minute, 1 minute 30 max videos, because why would people give you their attention if they don't know about you and they've never seen you before? They're certainly not going to give you their attention on a 4 or 5 minute video, because it's too much time. So all of those elements, the thumbnail, the commentary, the the length of the video, which they can see before they've even started watching as well, are so essential to getting some sort of traction on that channel.
I just put to the wind the length of a video, and I just recorded what I felt was right. It's in some circumstance, but I find, because my video is very specific about a subject matter that some applicants or managers want to hear, and then I market that out to them anyway.
Yeah,
get emailed to them. It gets a lot more views when you marketed rather than on social media. But now I'm looking at that formula, exactly that formula you were just saying. They're looking at shorter videos and then throwing it social media in a different way. I'm trying to get away from dry subjects as well, so I'm going to try to use a variety of different things.
I think humor really works, actually. I mean, you know, the job descriptions one, the sort of taking the mickey out of people that vlog, the interviews one, was all stuff that happens to everybody. We just rip the piss out of it, really. And again, because people can relate to it and there's some humor in there, it just becomes, it's watchable content, isn't it? People like it. So
I do try to drop humor in the video, but I think it's missed because it's 4 minutes in.
you need to, you know what, it's really also, actually, your first 3 seconds on a video are essential. And so we always try and put in, certainly on the funny ones, we always try and put in just a funny one-liner joke that you can get in 3 seconds, because that kind of keeps people staying for the rest of the video as well.
Yeah, the video that frustrates me, especially from recruiters, they introduce themselves for the first 30 seconds. I don't care who you are. I can read that above the video.
Exactly right. Exactly right. There's just no point. Hi, it's so-and-so from... They always try and drop in the company name as well. And I mean, this is a debate that we're having in the office at the moment around, you know, where's the line drawn between personal branding and company branding? We do very little on our company page on LinkedIn. Equally, and I don't think they have as much of this problem in the States. Well, certainly when I'm talking to Shay, they don't have this problem. They can be more salesy over in the US, but in the UK, we will run a mile away from content that even remotely smacks of sales and trying to sell something. We're just not interested. So there is a real fine line, I think, between getting that content right from a personal branding and a company branding perspective, that I'm not even sure that we've got that right yet. We're all always talking about it here, actually, around what else we can do.
I think even if it's a comical video, as long as it's honest, I think that's what attracts people to watch it. And that's what I've tried to do with every single one of my videos, is focus on that honesty kind of perspective.
I think you're absolutely right. And it's overused as well, isn't it? Because, you know, you listen to the Gary V's of the world and they'll always say it's all about authenticity. And, you know, it's so that word is so overused. And actually, it's very difficult to be authentic on camera when you're not used to being on camera, because you get nervous, and so your personality doesn't come across on that video at all. You feel sort of quite stifled and dry, because you're trying to deliver to, well, you're talking essentially to nobody, aren't you? You're just talking to a camera, and that's really weird feeling. And that's I think actually where taking everything you do on camera and bringing it into the editing suite that you use is essential, because you've just got to rip out all that other rubbish. And I feel for the guys that, I mean, I started in the same way, but I feel for the guys that are just reaching for their phone and hitting record and then uploading that video, because it's a kind of a one take thing. And I would never do a one take a video these days because I always mess it up. And there's always improvements that you can make in editing and to make that video more watchable for people. So I think, you know, anyone who's interested in doing video, they really have got to learn how to edit. And you know what to do with that file, and the other one, of course, is captioning it as well. Because, as I said on the sort of thing yesterday, you know, I don't know where this stat comes from, but 80% of people watch with the sound off. So, and we certainly see that when we are putting our video content out. If we put out stuff that hasn't got a caption, it gets, you know, very, very little engagement at all. So that stat must be true.
Yeah, I agree with you on the caption. I've learned now to start putting more caption. I haven't done it enough, and that's my problem. Mm. But I definitely agree. Whenever I put the YouTube of that video on, and you can hit the CC button and caption comes yes. up, the YouTube video tends to have a little bit more views. You know, I don't see the numbers, but right about 4,500-5,000 people is kind of where most of my videos sit. But when the YouTube one, it's about 6 or 7. So it is a couple of thousand. Yeah. More people do watch it, so it does capture people, definitely captures people.
It's a pain in the ass, to be honest with you. I mean, certainly for our 1 minute, 1 minute, 1.5 minute videos, you know, we caption those manually.
That's a lot. Which, you know, that's an hour.
Yeah, so I mean, that'll take you probably. I mean, I've got better at this, but I mean, for a minute and a half video, it'll probably take 20 minutes to caption it. Anything over that, I tend to send it over to the guys at rev.com, who then caption it and send it back. But yeah, we just don't put out video now without captions, because you know we know it's just not worth it, really. So
it's true. I've seen some people lately are starting to write their own captions by what looks like not a caption capture piece of software like in that you get in most editing suites, but actually using the title.
Oh really?
Do you know when you click on title and you up comes and it randomly places all over the screen. That's what they've been using as their capture, which is, I guess, you know, it does the job. It shows people what you're saying, but
yeah.
That must have took hours.
Yeah. For us, it does. It's part of the investment in doing video. And I suppose I learned this the hard way, because, you know, you sort of think, oh, I can't be bothered. Oh, I'll just whack that out. It's not going to get the same level of engagement if you're not doing all of the basics right. And that is writing good commentary, the thumbnail, the captions and all the rest of it. So
graphics, I found, increased my views as well. So any graphic I added to the screen, I've got a little start sequence. You've got an end sequence, haven't you, on your
video? Yes. Yes.
I've got a start sequence and an end sequence. I don't know whether to drop one.
And do you know what, though, Mark, actually, a bit of advice. I don't think I've seen your start sequence, actually, but I would ditch it, because that first 3 seconds is so critical to keeping and retaining the audience. And so that's why I've gone with an end sequence, because if they get that far, then the information's there. But I need to capture that attention within the first 3 seconds. And I see a lot of videos, especially if I'm sitting on the sofa in the evening just scrolling through LinkedIn, and the video starts to play and it's a 10-second intro or something like that, and I've haven't even seen what they're talking about. I've moved on because I'm not interested. So just, I think we...
Yeah, I've experimented with this. So I put about 30 seconds of what the video is about, if you get me, to capture people, and then the little start sequence, and then the actual content. So it's
right. Almost, oh yeah.
If it's almost like preparing people, this is, you know, 3 minutes long. Let's prepare people so they can, if they want to continue or not. And on YouTube, looking at the stats, the drop off is more near the end, if that makes sense. Mm. Kind of got.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm kind of glad that, but I am changing it. There's a lot I'm changing. I'm trying to reinvent what I'm doing with video at the moment.
That's the trick, you know. I mean, we're doing that on a daily basis as well. We're consistently asking ourselves what's, because I think this channel is evolving at such a huge rate that, you know, if we stuck to doing what we're doing today, you know, in 6-8 weeks, that's probably out of date and nobody wants to see that anymore. And we're kind of seeing that already a little bit. I mean, the first couple of videos, the funny ones, did really, really well, but you start to see engagement drop off a little bit. So I think you've constantly got to be thinking what's next and what can I try. We put out a vlog yesterday, and I haven't done that for probably over a year. And it was happened because I was going to an event and I thought, well, I'll just capture some stuff. But in our sort of in our engagement levels, that vlog flopped because it was 6 minutes long. And it was a test actually for my audience to think, well, you know, I've got all these kind of loyal people that follow us on LinkedIn. Will they now give me 6 minutes of their time? And the answer was pretty much no, they won't. So, you know, but it's still important to try that and see what works and what doesn't work. I think the problem a lot of people experience is that they like a certain format, or they like the way they do videos, and so they're going to stick with that format.
I agree.
If it's not getting any engagement. And if it's not getting engagement, people aren't watching it, ditch it and do something different, and just, you know, be really self-critical about what you're doing, because it's obvious when it's not working.
When my videos get comments, lots of comments, a lot of people coming back with stories, and that's where
brilliant
engagement. And then when I get personal messages, that's when I know the video is working, even if it's one. I don't run for likes. Views to a point. Views I use as a statistic of where that, when I put that out, why it did that, how did it flop. And then I look for feedback. Then I ask a few people I know really well.
Yeah.
Why did that flop? Do you know why? And then I got a friend called Scott who's too honest.
Well, that's good. I'll tell you what, though, that's really valuable, because you know, often you'll go out looking for a bit of feedback and people won't be honest with you. They'll tell you you're amazing, and it's not what you need to hear. You need to hear the too honest person that is going to tell you exactly why, don't you?
Brilliant. It's totally brilliant. He's quite honest with my podcast as well. So it's like, okay.
Good.
It's great. It's a moving feast. And like, you don't want to be known to be the comedian of LinkedIn, do you? You want to be taken seriously to a point. But then you don't want to miss out entertaining and drawing an audience.
I think you've hit the nail on the head, actually, and that's exactly what we're trying to do with our content now. So humor has its place because it actually drives an audience in, and then I think you've also got to add in content there that is challenging people's thinking, or is a little bit controversial, or is asking questions. And we've done stuff on, you know, we started to do some stuff on the recruitment industry recently, and I put out a video about exclusivity and why companies will just feed a vacancy out to, you know, 15 recruiters when it's madness doing it that way. And that attracted a huge amount of comments and attention. I think that had sort of 2,500 likes or something on that video. So, but I think you've got to mix it up a little bit, because I also think we've actually, and a lot of people have commented on this on LinkedIn over recent weeks and months, there's a limited time by which you can easily grow an audience, and now is it. I mean, there are a lot of people, you know, putting time limits on that. I wouldn't dare to try and do that, because I don't actually know what it would be. But at some point, they're going to change the algorithm and make it more difficult for us all to grow an audience. So, you know, now is the time to invest and get those audience numbers as high as you possibly can, because you've just got much greater organic reach with a larger audience. So, that's essential, I think, in my view at the moment.
But that's the problem with the algorithm on LinkedIn. It's so unstable. I mean, the other day we lost all our videos. Do you remember?
We did. Yeah.
Do I
remember? I became like Gary Vaynerchuk for a day doing that.
I know. You give me great property advice, by the way.
Yeah. Well, he was so like, fucking buy everything.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, sell.
Yeah.
But that was the thing, though. So it's such an unstable platform, and we spend a lot of time and effort, you know, branding ourselves out there, and then the algorithm bloody changes. I think the algorithm in 4 years I've been in business has changed once every 6 months, or maybe even more than that. So I was putting out really good short form posts, then it turned into long form posts. They were pushed, and then there was like pictures, they were put there, that's all disappeared. Video to a period of time was pushed straight away, and now it seems to be something else. I don't know what it is at the moment.
Yeah. I think they're always going to mess around with it, and it will become more difficult. I mean, you know, a lot of people comment on this and say exactly the same thing happened with Facebook. And there was a point on Facebook where you could literally bang your head against a keyboard and you would develop a following, which ultimately people that went on to monetize. I think we're still in that zone with LinkedIn at the moment where you can, I mean, Christ, I look at some of the content we put out, honestly, and because I'm very self-critical and I think it's shit, but people are still following us and the audience is still building. And so I think this is a moment in time where people should absolutely grab it and try and maximize it, because it's not going to be like this forever.
Do you know, you mentioned monetization there. Someone came to me the other day saying, when are you going to monetize your video? And I was like, what? That's not my end game.
No, it's not. And I think you've hit the nail on the head there with that question mark, because the people always, and it's natural, I completely understand this, people produce video with the intention of selling and trying to get something from it. And I had to learn this lesson the hard way as well. If you go into it with that attitude, people are not going to watch your content, because that whole approach comes across in your video. I think at the moment it isn't necessarily about trying to monetize it. It is about building brand, be that, you know, company or personal brand, building that audience, and then playing the long game and seeing where that takes you in the future. I'm not entirely sure yet how this monetizes. It does in the short term, in terms of the fact that we get clients ringing us and giving us vacancies, which is great. Yes. But I'm not driving a Maserati yet. So, you know, people look and say, oh, you're 30,000 followers, you must be rolling in money. Well, no, we're not. We're just producing video content. So I don't think the attitude should be monetization. I think it should be giving and not selling.
Well, to put that in perspective, on YouTube, to really make some serious money on there, you need more than 1 million followers.
Yeah, and that's bloody hard work to get that, isn't it?
But I wish I caught on to that in the early days and did something in the early days, because there's people on there now, they don't really post much, and they still got 50, 60,000 followers, subscribers watching their stuff. So I think one of the YouTubers put their actual actual financials on there and how much video
they're
making. If I can find it, dig it out. And I think one video got 50,000 views and they got $250 for that.
Yeah, it's hard work. You know, it's really hard work.
It's not worth doing. And I think you need 1,000 subscribers and you need 10,000 hours viewed. And that's when you start getting monetization from YouTube automatically. And we're talking $2-3 a month then.
It's just hard, really hard work, and it scares me actually, the amount of kids these days that want to be the next sort of YouTuber or a big influencer, because you know, there are a lot of broken hearts out there trying to chase that dream and just never get there.
And it's a bigger dream than becoming a professional footballer, you know what I mean? At least professional footballer, you've got like a 1 in 300 chance. With a YouTuber, millionaire YouTuber,
I know,
1 in 5 million.
And this is me probably just being old, but I mean, there are people now, I can't remember what his name is actually. Is it someone called The Beast or something on YouTube? He produced a video that was just him watching paint dry, literally. I don't know how long it was. It was a long time, this video. And honestly, millions and millions and millions and millions of views. And you just think, I just don't get that at all. And then there was another video this guy did, and he literally said for 24 hours, he was just saying PewDiePie, PewDiePie, PewDiePie on a YouTube video. And again, millions and millions of views. So I don't understand that.
My favorite YouTube at the moment is, I'm going to get this right, ASMR. Have you ever heard of that before?
No.
Right. This is an extraordinary phenomenon that's happened on YouTube. Okay. ASMR is audible sensory
I have heard of it. Is this when they're sort of cracking soap or something and you just...
Whispering
and
and tapping, and you're supposed to give you these tingles. So I sat there once experimenting with this. I had my headphones on, and so this girl was like whispering into the mic. And I was like, this is really strange. She's very attractive, though. I don't mind looking at
her. here's an audio sensory thing for you then, Mark.
See,
that's me opening a packet of hula hoops.
Oh, perfect. Now crunch, because people listen to them now crunching them and eating them. And I was listening to this one time. Anyway, you're kind of like, okay, this is getting relaxing now. I can get it. And then suddenly there's a freaking advert in the middle of it.
Completely breaks your concentration. No.
It's strange, but it's huge. These guys are getting millions of views. Millions.
I mean, crazy, isn't it?
And that's all they do, is sit in their bedrooms with two microphones and just whisper in each one of them. But this is the thing about video at the moment, and where it's gone and how it's changed everything and how it's made our world very, how can I put it, open but distant at the same time, if that makes sense.
Yes, I know what you mean.
It's created weird.
It's a funny one, actually. And I think, you know, I mean, I always look at this from the perspective that we always used to sit there and watch Coronation Street or whatever it was. And then old Barry would try and sell you some slip bang in the middle. and you'd put up with Barry because you were there for the show. And the content and the quality of the show was good enough to attract the audience. Yes. And yet a lot of companies these days just try to be Barry flogging slip bang and give no thought to the value of the content that they're giving people. So is it any surprise that nobody comes along to watch? Not really, no, because we wouldn't sit through half an hour of Barry trying to sell us slip bang, really. So I think it's amazing in the sense that we have now all got the ability to start a show and put content out there. I just think we've just not focused enough on the quality of that content, which is why you see a lot of the shit on LinkedIn, really, of just rubbish content. So, and there are a lot of people that say that video is decreasing in the amount of views that it's getting. And I don't think it's necessary that video per se is decreasing. I think it's the quality of the video is so poor that no one wants to watch it. So I think we really got to have a real full concentration on the quality of the stuff that we're talking to people about.
Especially in our sphere, recruitment.
Oh my God, yeah.
I just, if I have to watch someone tell me about a job they're recruiting again, I may have to go around the office and beat them.
Honestly. I said this yesterday, and you know, and I get it. I mean, I get it completely because, again, that's that natural progression, isn't it? We are recruiters, and therefore, we're all about jobs. So I'm going to go on video and tell people about jobs. The reality is that is the most boring content anybody could ever listen to, and it's much easier. And you need the level of focus to be able to read a job ad or a job description. You don't want some random idiot like me talking about it. And everything that we've ever done on sort of job content has flopped because it doesn't translate well across the video. You've got to think of you've got to be more creative than that, I think, in the content that you put out.
But there's a line in recruitment where I'm looking at crossing this line, by the way, with my podcast and maybe with video in the near future, but definitely with the podcast, where no one wants to bring their client into the video and walk around their facilities. I'm in a great sector, engineering, manufacturing, showing people.
Yeah.
Manufacturing line and where they can work.
And there's so many opportunities, isn't there? It's like old Greg, what's his name, on the factory floor going through the processes of creating Bakewell tarts. And that sort of content is awesome, to be honest with you. It's really cool.
This is it. And there's a company, there's a magazine, but they do video as well, called MTD, and they do manufacturing videos and they show old machines, and that's their content.
I love it.
To me, it's really interesting because it's engineering, but it's I want to do that. I want to do that version of it.
I think that's a brilliant idea, actually. I think we did some walking around and getting clients on video content. The problem is it's a lot of marketing agencies. And whilst some of the offices are quite cool, there's nothing really to see apart from some Macs and desks and people. But if you can get under the skin of a manufacturing line, that's really cracking content. I mean, my two favorite factories were the Henry factory, Henry Hoover factory down in the southwest somewhere. I loved seeing how Henry was actually made. Brilliant. And it was still manufactured in the UK, which was brilliant. And it was before the days that I was doing anything to do with video. And then my other favorite one was going to a makeup factory in Ashford. It's all, you know, highly technological these days, but they had the old lipstick machine still in the building. And so you looked at this sort of old mechanical machine, and then they guided your eyes up to the ceiling, and there was this sort of stalactite. Is it stalactite, the one that comes down, or whichever one it
holds tight?
Of lipstick that had literally come out of the spring-loaded machine. The clasper had missed it, and it ended up just creating this stalactite on the ceiling. It was just brilliant. It was just brilliant to see that that's how it used to be made. So again, trying to capture that on video would be so cool. So I think you've hit on something there.
Yeah, but that's crossing the line. And I think recruiters can't cross that line, because the moment you introduce your client to the world, that means everyone's going to be them. So I'm in this. I'm in this situation at the moment. I've got a couple of really good guys, really good managing directors of companies. And I'm thinking, if I introduce them to the world I'm working with them, what's going to be the aftermath for me? Or shall I just just do it.
I just do it because actually, and I think, but do it with clients where your relationship is really strong.
That's what I'm saying.
You know, when the other recruiters come along and that inevitably they will do, and they'll try and, you know, cold call your client, the attitude from that client would be, well, no, how cheeky are you? I work with Mark because he's bloody good at what he does. Why the hell am I just going to start doing business with you because you cold called me? And I think so the relationship's got to be really strong with those clients, and then I'd be really open about it. Because again, one of the biggest complaints from candidates is that we don't give them enough information and we're not open enough about who we're recruiting for. And so there is a real fine line there in my sort of world where we have to feed these candidates with the information they need to be able to make decisions, but equally we don't want to lose our clients in the process. So, but I'd just go for it, Mark, to be honest with you.
I think I will. I mean, some of the stuff that I work retained on, I have opened the client up to the world in an advert, and that hasn't really resulted in anything negative towards my business and people. So I think it's definitely a line that someone needs to cross first. And I'm going to go, you've crossed it a few times. I've seen you do it.
We have. Yeah. We did it. I mean, we've done it. We do it when we get the opportunity to do some video with a client. We've just been open about it. And actually,
helps.
We used to be quite... And we used to do quite a lot of it, and I've never lost a client through that. I mean, yeah, the reality is these companies are getting BD'd by recruiters all of the time. Yeah. So, you know, I mean, I think we're naive in thinking that just because we put out the client name or a video with the client in it, that that's going to result in us losing the client. They've made their decision to work with us as their chosen recruiter. And they're, you know, they're only going to shift that decision if we fuck up, to be honest with you, and we don't deliver what we say we can deliver. So, yeah, I'd just go for it.
All right, awesome. You're giving me the motivation.
Hey.
Oh, God. I guess this end this, like I always ask a lot of kind of my podcast guests, is kind of the future of recruitment. I'm kind of ending on that. What's your thought? Where do you think this is all going now?
I think we've talked about this for donkey's years, is my opinion. I started a job board back in the year 2000, and I was so cocky and arrogant. And
top dog jobs, is that the
one? Yeah, and I was saying to people, this is the end of recruiters as we know it. And of course it wasn't. Job boards became the major tool, and recruiters were their major client in the end. I don't think it's going to change at all. I think technology will come along, which will be to our advantage and support and help. And in some ways, actually, also not that helpful technology. I did a video the other day around why the hell people aren't putting contact their personal contact details into job descriptions and making it really difficult for candidates to reach out and talk to people. And that's, I think, where technology has actually, you know, served us very badly, because we now hide behind all these applicant tracking systems, and we make it almost impossible for anyone to actually have a conversation. And then we then have a go at this new generation of people and say, well, you can't communicate like we used to. Well, you're not giving us the opportunity because you won't let us talk to you. I mean, the irony is just ridiculous. So I think, you know, technology will come along, and as recruiters and as business people, we need to scrutinize that technology and see what the advantages and disadvantages of it are. But ultimately, this is a people game, and it is totally, totally dependent on strong relationships. And you know, AI can't do that. Yeah, AI cannot talk a candidate into maybe considering a role that you've just taken on. It just can't do it. It can fire a job alert to someone and say, here's a new job. But if you're not looking, you're not going to be interested. So, you know, that negotiate. I mean, Greg Savage, I think, talks about this all the time. That
he does. Oh, fair play. He's been talking about it for 10 years.
Exactly. And he's absolutely spot on, because there is nothing that will replace the recruiter and just a conversation between human beings. You know, no technology yet can replace that. So it's not really.
Let's be honest, there's no such thing as AI. It's narrow AI, and that's what it is. It's
not, exactly.
It's not general AI, which is about 400 years from now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And who cares? We'll be dead by then, Mark.
Yeah, who cares then? But the other part, I think, with the recruitment industry, where it is changing, or I believe it is changing, as we become more social and more focused on branding ourselves as individuals, we're starting to become more inbound and outbound in the way
totally.
We bring our clients in. I'll be honest with you, 4 years of doing recruitment, I've done 5 real good BD calls in that time. Yep. Everything's been inbound.
I would probably say the same for us as actually as well. To be honest, we don't cold call. We don't sell. It is all about it is about getting your inbound marketing strategy absolutely right. And it's a pity actually, because a lot of the recruiters that I've worked for previously as well are so based in 1987, because that's the last time that the senior management were actually at a desk doing the job, and so their view of the industry is just predicated by that, you know, that view, that 1987 view, and they drive these stupid KPIs in on, you know, number of cold calls made and all the rest of it, and they don't recognise that the world has changed. So yeah, inbound is absolutely the way to go.
Brilliant, absolutely brilliant. Thank you, Mark. Thank you for your time.
No problem.
I would normally end this by saying where can people find you, but I don't think that's going to be a worry.
Check me out on LinkedIn.
Yeah, there we go. Find him on LinkedIn. Awesome, buddy. Thank you very much for your time.
No problem whatsoever. Speak soon.
Bye-bye. It's not the survival of the fittest. It's who is the most adaptable to change. And that, in my humblest of opinions, is what Mark has done here. Social media is not about surviving. It's adapting to it. And what Mark and Olivia and the rest of the team have done is opened the door to social media and say, come on in, come and check out what we got to say and what we've got to do. And it's humbling. It's honest. It's true. And I hate to use the cliche word authentic, but it is. It's all those things. And that, to me, is the template, not just of a recruitment business, but also of a business in general. And I think we need to embrace this. And this ability to adapt to change on social media, there is running packs now of different levels of businesses on social media. You've got Mark and Shay and a few others out there running in the front pack, talking about what's going on in their business, what they're doing, talking about honest things and answering questions and not hiding behind this veil of secrecy that the recruitment industry seems to do. And that is the trailing pack, in my opinion. There's businesses out there that haven't even written a blog yet. So I think if you're going to model your agency into the future and adapt to change, you need to look at people like Mark's business and look at it hard, because this, in my opinion, is the future. But it doesn't stand still. Watch how he pivots. Watch how he changes, because he is very adaptable with his finger right on the middle of the pulse. So thank you for listening to this podcast and me ranting just then. Coming up soon, I've got a really good podcast with a lovely lady, which I won't mention just yet, but hopefully we'll be out soon. Take care. Bye-bye.